The Sunday Show with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome to the Sunday Show. And this evening, we have a very special guest. This man has made me laugh more than any other person on the planet. And that's giving away my age as well. Ricky Tomlinson, it is an absolute pleasure. Welcome to the Sunshine Studio.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, I know you're over, of course, to promote your fabulous new show that's called Irish Annie's, which is going to be doing the tour all over Ireland. And we're going to have a chat about that. And we're going to chat with Asa Murphy, the writer, as well. But before that, Ricky, of course, your TV are unbelievable. Wonderful. When I was looking at your bio, you worked very hard in TV.
I've
it was
been
unbelievable.
Very lucky, Kate. It's been lucky. I didn't come into the game till I was 45, and I'd had a sort of a, let's say, a turbulent past.
Yeah.
And I got into the movie game, and I ended up having a little drink with Robert De Niro, done a full movie with Samuel Jackson, had a dance with Lauren Bacall, done a couple of movies with the world's number one director, which is Ken Loach.
Yes.
Never mind Spielberg.
Amazing.
He makes movies costing millions. Ken Loach makes movies that cost pounds but have an impact on you. And also the wonderful Roland Joffe. So I've been wonderful. I've had a wonderful time. And it changed my life. It really changed my life. As I say, I've met some of these wonderful people. I've known Asa for years. And he's got a great reputation in Liverpool. And if you've got a great reputation in Liverpool, it's like Mick Miller, a comedian, or Jackie Hamilton. They've got great reputations. And so Asa's got that sort of thing. And when he said to me, would you do 10 minutes in this play? I thought, oh, he needs someone to attract the women, so I will, I'll go. So,
brilliant.
But you know, can I just say something? If anyone comes to the show, and I hope they all come to the show, don't just leave the theatre. We spend nearly as much time in the foyer at the end of the show, meeting people, letting them have selfies. I take loads of photographs and caricatures. That's to me is as important as the show.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, that is amazing. You said 45 there, Ricky. Up to then, had you always had the desire? You know, you always knew you were very funny, I'm sure.
I was a show-off. I was a show-off because I had three brothers and we lived in a little two-up, two-down terraced house with just a cold water tap. That was it. The toilet down the yard and all. And, you know, but I just got lucky. But I had a good family. And as you know, from 1972. And then the government finally gave us an absolute pardon after 47 years. 47 years, he said. You're not guilty.
These things take time.
47 minutes after I was found guilty.
And that's a very interesting story. I mean, a lot of people probably don't know anything about that, Rick.
Well,
it'd be interesting to tell
them. When I done my autobiography, just called Ricky, my wife said to me, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to do my autobiography. She said, it's got to be the truth. I said, it will be the truth, Reece. I said, there's stuff in it, Reece, that you don't know about and the stuff in it that I wish I hadn't done, things I hadn't said. I said, but anyway, it outsold everybody's. It sold a third of a million in its first print and it went to number one for 5 weeks and got nominated for Book of the Year. So now I'm digressing a bit. I've just finished my first children's book for my grandkids. We have a couple of them come and stay with us, and I have Jack on one knee and Maggie on the other, and I tell them a chapter, and then they go off to bed, and they love it. And I was doing an interview. I can't remember the name of the person who was interviewed. On one knee and Maggie on the other knee, and you tell them the story. I said, yeah. She said, how old are they? I said, Jack's 47, and Maggie's 58.
Kids love that. That's hilarious. I mean, you look amazing. I mean,
you're looking fantastic.
Whatever the secret is. That's amazing. I mean, to do children's books, it's a very interesting genre now.
My grandkids. I spoil them. I really do. I spoil them. And people say to me, why do you work so hard? Now you could retire and go and live in Spain. Or I say, I've got to help them now to the next step. Like, we're just sorting the eldest one out because he's off to university. And it's not cheap now. I don't want him to have to worry about a penny. That's my quest now, till Louis gets his degree and does everything. Then I've got the others coming up. And I think I've done my duty as a granddad. I don't want to say too much because people think you're blowing your own trumpet. But I think I've done my duty to my grandkids, my granddaughters. And I've got a great grandson who's called Harley. And I said to his mother, it's a good job his surname isn't Davidson. He'd be known as Harley Davidson. But he's only about four, and he's Welsh, you know. No, and he loves the Welsh rugby team, and, you know.
I mean, just to go back, you were very active in the whole trade union movement.
Yeah.
You know, you always believed in fairness, and you've a huge you know, record on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, how did you get into all that?
I've always known what's right and wrong. And without giving anything away, I've just finished a thing with Sue Johnson where I've had my DNA done and she's had her DNA done. And what we've just been talking about is, I can't say too much, but that will come through there.
Is this sort of where you're from kind of thing?
Well, it's where you're
ancestry.com
from and
stuff,
yeah. We've got Irish descendants and Scottish descendants, but it's both me and Sue Johnson, it's absolutely amazing where we both end up.
I
can't even tell my wife. And she's going mad, she's tempting me and everything. Would you like a little bit of this, a little bit of a sweet after your dinner? No thanks, please. I can't tell you.
Trying to bribe you. But it's funny because I got a present of that and I found out it was 4% Scottish. Yeah, it was great. It's a kind of a buzz off it, isn't it? Like,
but the fella who done it is absolutely amazing. And when he showed me and he gave me these particular books and he went, that's why you are the way you are.
Yeah, so that's...
I hope your listeners, I hope the viewing minutes on, honestly... It's unbelievable. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, no, but it is very interesting, isn't it? It is something we're all fascinated
Absolutely,
about, isn't it?
Like, yeah, but it's, I think people are liking it. I'm working with Sue Johnson. Oh, she's amazing. She is at nothing's too much trouble. We have a good laugh.
You have a fantastic, long-standing rapport with Sue, haven't you? I mean,
Absolutely.
She's incredible. Yeah.
And people say to me, how did you sort of get into the Royal Family? And I was up for an award with the Royal Television Society and I'm there with my wife and it was a black tie job. And Rita said, Rick, will you go and get me a little bit of a couple of sandwiches and a sausage roll? And I walked over and I bumped into this young girl in front of me and she turned round and she looked at me and she went, oh, you're my dad, aren't you? And I went back to Rita and I said, she thinks I'm her dad. And that night we got a phone call, can you come up to the studio tomorrow? And it was there, she said, I want you to play me dad. So yeah. She knew exactly who she wanted.
The phenomenal success, I mean, when you look at polls and charts, like 9 out of the 100 most famous British sitcoms, you're like, yeah. You're way up there, yeah. BAFTAs. The concept of a Manchester family watching the telly and just like making tea and what goes on. I mean, it was ingenious, wasn't it?
Because I think everyone can associate with it. Everyone knows someone like Nana.
Yeah, Nana Saints was fabulous.
Would you like some wafer thin?
She's a great appetite.
What difference would it make whether it's an inch thick or wafer thin?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't eat it, do they? You know, you talk, Liverpool has got loads of comics and loads of, but we recently had a night with Brendan O'Carroll. Ah, absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, we've had Ailish on the programme, Winnie.
He was on the Empire Theatre and he winged the last section of the show. And it was the people in the cast who must have heard him, worked with him forever, as got that old family. Tears were running down their face and he was carrying on and he made us so very welcome, didn't he? Made us so welcome, you know.
When you talk about scripted there, it seemed like a lot of it would have been just you guys talking. I mean, that was the amazing thing about it, wasn't it?
Oh, it was, yeah. A lot of it was just us, you know, and the catchphrase and one thing and another. That was just...
And what was the famous phrase, Ricky?
My arse.
There we go. That's the promo there. And that was incredible, wasn't it? That was just your line.
Yeah,
that was...
but we had a bit of license. We had a bit of license if you could see something. That's like the two documentaries I've just done with Sue. They're not ordinary documentaries. They're jokey and we have a laugh and you know, we're just being ourselves and going around because we both realise how lucky we both are to be working. You know, as I say, I'm 84 and she's, I think, 70 now.
God, it's hard to... Looking at you, it's just a number.
We both have the time of our life and yeah. We both play little practical jokes on each other and stuff like that. And it's a pleasure. Who at 84 can get up and say, I can't wait to go to work? I can. It's wonderful.
I grew up with Brookside, the 1980s, of course. Just under 3,000 episodes. Bobby Grant, of course.
Yeah.
Unreal, wasn't it? It captured the whole imagination in terms of soaps. Because now I'd never watch a soap, to be honest. But Brookside, I wasn't going to miss an episode.
See, I believe in luck and I believe in fate. After I come out of prison, there was a job advertised, someone with trade union experience and who had an equity card while I was playing around the pubs and the clubs to feed my kids. So I had an equity card and a new trade union and I wrote away for an audition, but I didn't put my name on the application form because if he'd recognised it, he'd say, anyway, I put a phony name on. I had to go all the way to London and I drove down in an old post office van because I was living in North Wales in a little tiny cottage. Anyway, cut the story short, I met this fella and I told him to stick the job. I didn't like what he was saying and I told him to stick the job. And as I'm going down in the lift, he's shouting, I know who you are. You're Ricky Tomlinson. I don't care. Stick your play.
You were discovered.
Anyway, he gave me the job. And when the play was going on, it was called United Kingdom. It was on for 2.5 hours on a Saturday night. It's never been repeated. because it would fit in with what's going on in the economy now. Brookside was just coming into being. And one of the writers, a lad called Andy Lynch, who's Johnny Vegas's best mate, he's writing storylines, but he's watching the play at the same time. And he phoned Phil Redmond and he said, I've just found Bobby Grant. So that was it. From one little job to the next, and then I haven't stopped.
But it was lovely, I think, the way that Bobby was so upset, like the fact that he had a private home. He was a dedicated council house man, wasn't he?
Oh,
like,
yeah, absolutely.
That was just part of the whole
absolutely.
Charm of it. Yeah. But, and then, of course, Cracker as well.
I mean, Bobby Coltrane.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
He was absolutely. We had some fun. Can I just say this while I'm here? There was an Irish lad in it, and he played a bent detective. His name was Lorcan Cranach. And I think he should have had a BAFTA for his performance in Cracker. He's a copper who's bent and he's going off his head, and in the end, I don't think he got the recognition that he deserved. His name was Lorcan Cranach. I'd love to bump into him while I'm over there just to tell him to his face. His performance was amazing, amazing.
If you're listening, Lorcan, if you're listening in now, you know where to go.
And as I say, I've worked with Liam Cunningham. Oh, what a lad
wow.
he is. What, we've done
Game
Roughnecks
of Thrones
together.
As well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Huge.
And he was a good sport. We used to play a few practical jokes because we worked on a rig. It was a rail rig. Obviously, it wasn't working. It wasn't pumping oil or whatever it was. And we used to have a little thing there. We used to fish off the rig. And the first one to catch a fish got a fiver off all the others. They used to bring the grub out about every 2 or 3 days. And I said to the lads, can you get me a fish? So they got me a fish, a dead fish. And I put it on the end of my put it in the water.
Ah, yeah. The original.
When they were out there, I shouted, quick, all of you, in here, in here. I've caught one, I've caught a fish. I wound this in the fish. And Jimmy Cosmo was in it, a big Scottish Jimmy. Greatly went, that's the first time I've seen a live fish with its eyes shut. It was just a giggle and a laugh,
It. And of course, well, it was Cracker. I mean, it's actually from 1993 to 2006. I mean, it was a long run.
It was great.
Yeah, it was really up there. It was one of the best, wasn't it? It was a fantastic programme.
I was about 17 stone then, and Robbie must have been 25 stone. And we were in Hong Kong doing an episode called White Ghost. And we're walking along, and there's this shop window, big shop window, and there's three fellas, and they've got three Chinese lads, and they've got wooden mallets and chisels, and they're going, and I'm saying, I wonder what they're doing, what they're doing. It turned out they were making coffins. They were chiseling the coffins. And when they turned to the window and seen us two, the size of one, he said, go on, hop it, and chisels.
Coffins, fish, I'll tell you, it's all happening. My special guest this evening, Ricky Tomlinson and Asa Murphy. Asa, you're the writer of Irish Annies. You're very welcome to the show.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. Thanks for inviting us.
Now, I must say that this is a really exciting show that you've got coming up. I was looking at the concept of it. So could you just give us a little bit of an idea about how you came up with the idea?
Well, as you say, Ed, it was my origins family-wise. My family originated from Mitchelstown in County Cork, and my granddad was from Tralee. I'm from a big Liverpool family. And when I was about 19, my parents went back to Ireland and lived again in Fermoy and Mitchelstown. So obviously I split half of my life between Liverpool and Ireland. And there was a particular pub called the Corner House in Mitchelstown. And when we used to go in there for a drink, I used to look at the characters and I used to think, these are actually almost larger than life. You can't sometimes invent some of these people that come into frequent bars like Liverpool and bars in Ireland. So I remember making a mental note of them and thinking, wouldn't it be great one day to sort of create a play or a musical based upon real people? So that's what I did during the lockdown. I shut myself away in my shed at the end of the garden and I wrote Irish Annies. And the background of it was I've been a big band singer my whole career. I've always sang swing music, and Ricky opened a club in Liverpool called The Green Room, and it was the best cabaret club in the whole of Merseyside.
Oh, I don't doubt it for a second.
People travelled from everywhere, didn't they, Rick?
Yeah.
And Rick always put quality entertainment on. We had Joe Longthorne there, didn't we? And we had Mick Miller, all the great Jimmy Crickets, Tom O'Connor, PJ Proby, all big
all
acts.
Came, yeah.
And it was always full. So that's how 20 years ago I met Rick and he put me on there. And so when it comes to the lockdown, obviously entertainers were out of work. We were told to retrain. I was like, well, what are we going to do? This is what we do. So I decided to use the time. I thought, right, this is an opportunity to not sort of maybe wallow, self-pity, do something positive. So I shut myself away and I wrote the musical Irish Annies, and it's based upon a pub, which could be anywhere, but it has all these different characters in it that come in and out of Irish Annies, and they have a story. And that story also has a moral as well. So when people come to the theatre, the experience we wanted them to have, and they have had in the previous shows, is they laugh, they cry, they sing all the songs.
That's right.
They leave the theatre theatre after a sort of a roller coaster of a journey. But mostly, it's just fun, isn't it, Rick?
Yeah, we have a laugh. That's the thing. Yeah. The cast has a laugh. Do you know what I mean? We take the mickey out of each other. Yeah, and, yeah. You know,
there's little moments again with his ad-lib moments and stuff like that. But when I wrote it, the one person I wanted in it more than anything was Ricky. And I'd written this character and I thought, I wonder whether he'll do it. And when I rang him up and said, listen, I've written this thing, Irish Annie's, I'd love your help on it. And straight away he said, put me down, lad. And he's been like, well, he's one of my best mates anyway, but he's been such a huge part of getting Irish Annie's established. We started off with one show, didn't we, Rick?
Yeah.
And last year we did 18, and next this tour now is something like 35 dates around the UK, and we're absolutely over the moon, obviously, to be bringing it to Ireland.
Oh, but sure, I mean, the love for Ricky, I suppose, is...
I love it.
...world famous at this
stage.
I mean,
I
love it.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not being funny. I love the audience. I wouldn't mind if we didn't do anything on the stage, if we stood in the foyer all night and done selfies and photographs and...
Mm.
And caricatures, because I love hearing their stories. And like, I walk through the streets of Liverpool and like people will stop me and say, hey, did you know our so-and-so?
Yeah.
He went to school. I said, oh, how is he doing? I said, well, he snuffed it. Like, oh, well, never mind. And that can happen 10, 20 times during the day.
And it does.
And you've got to...
you but can't make tenfold.
You've got to have time to stop.
Yeah.
But that's very interesting, Ricky, because I went to see Sir Ian McKellen. You know, he did his one-man show at 80. And he went all around, all over Ireland, Belfast, he went all over the UK, and I was lucky to get tickets with him. And he came out, and he literally came along, and before the show started, he was chatting to people, and after. And again, it's such a unique thing, because people are like, Gandalf, you know.
Yeah. Ian McKellen.
But, yeah.
What an actor.
And he was up doing the, like, you know.
Ricky was like that, and I also said to him when I wrote the show, and Ricky's character emerges quite early, because we want him, he's in it all the way through, but his entrance is he's whistling backstage, and he's whistling a well-known song called In My Liverpool Home, and Annie says, oh look, it's one of my regulars, you might know this fella. So I said to Ricky when we were rehearsing, because I was directing it, I said, now listen, when you come through the door, you're going to have to pause before you say your first line. And he said, why? I said, because they'll go crazy, the audience. And he went, what for? I said, because it's you don't realise how much people love you. I know it because I experience it walking around with him all the time, that people stop him, and he always has time for people. So what happened was, the first show we did, that's exactly what happened. He came through the door and the audience went crazy. This went on for 5 minutes, by the way. Clapping, several shouts of my arse, obviously.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And the response to the first tour of Irish Annie's was just absolutely phenomenal. And I want to say as well, Ricky, after the show, he would go into the foyer and he would spend, in one theatre, you were there for an hour and a half.
Oh yeah, well, whatever it is.
Having photographs, talking to people. It made their day, and they come away and said, not only did we enjoy the show, but we got to meet Ricky afterward and he spent time with us. So when you come to the shows in Ireland, the Irish leg of the tour, you'll see the show, but you'll get to meet the man himself.
Yeah. But that's such a beautiful trait, you know, because you don't see it. I saw it with them, George R.R. Martin, who wrote Game of Thrones. It was at an event and he went and chatted to everybody there as well. But you don't see it. But it comes, I think, from humble beginnings as well, and people that don't get above their station. And I mean, I think you epitomise that, Ricky, in the best of ways.
But I love it, but I always take the mickey, you know. I say, yeah. I was over in Australia. We'd gone over there, me and Rita, and Riverdance was on, you know? And we went to see Riverdance, and someone said to me, what was it like? I said, I couldn't help but my gag in. I said, it was great. I said, well, that Michael Flatley doesn't like you joining in, does he?
That's it, isn't it? And I mean, AC, you were telling me as well that 70% of the music is original, which is fabulous.
Yeah.
Original Irish music.
Yeah, I think that was important. I released an album last year called Take Me Home, which was 12 original Irish songs I'd written myself, and most of them featured in Irish Annie's. And I felt it was important to not sort of regurgitate the same old songs that people would expect in an Irish show. And I meant that out of respect to the Irish audience, because I love Irish music and it's my heritage and I'm very proud of my Irish heritage. But I felt that there were certain shows you'll go and you'll hear those songs over and over again. And that's great, but why not have new Irish music?
New one, yeah.
So in the show, you'll hear songs like I wrote when I was in Galway, I Love Galway Bay. We have one called Shenanigans. We have a song called I Saw You, which is a love story.
Lovely.
We have Dimple in Chin. And there's all
now
these...
Now you have the Kirk Douglas
I've got the
Dimple.
Yes, which is... Yeah,
I mean, that's like very handsome, of course, very famous down through the years.
Mine's
the Dimple.
Mine's grown over.
Yeah, it's grown over. You can't see it.
Just need to
I
trim
got
that there.
Because people weren't paying enough.
We recorded that and Ricky
he's
was...
two dimples.
Yeah. Yeah.
They call him Dimples.
He's got two dimples, but we can't show them. But he's got, yeah, so we recorded Dimple and Chin on the album with Rick as well. But I think the one song that sort of stood out on the whole album was a song called Friends. And I'd written this song when I sort of felt during the lockdown. And what's been good that's come out of that is the fact that people are now not too embarrassed about talking about mental health issues. So if your mates are a bit flat or a bit down, give them a ring.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Or if you notice somebody's not themselves, we'll make the effort. You know what I mean? So I wrote this song called Friends, and we were asked by the BBC to do a thing called the Narrowboat Sessions, where we go along, we record original music on a narrowboat studio. So me and Rick, and the donation from the views on YouTube go to cancer research. So we went along, didn't we, Rick? And we did this song live, and it's on, you can go on YouTube now, you can see it, Narrowboat Sessions, Friends. And we did it. It went live on YouTube, and the guy rang me up and said, this has only been on 2 days, and it's had 500,000 views, and it's just touching 1 million now. And I started getting emails from people all over the world saying, this song has changed my life.
Great.
It's unbelievable. And what it was, I sing the first part, and then Ricky speaks the middle part, and it was so powerful.
Wait, Ricky, if you'd like, I'd love to hear you say your lines in that. It would be great for the listeners.
Yeah. Okay. But when he's playing the guitar and it's just in the background, it's beautiful. And it's got, I'm here when you need me. And when I need you, I hope you're there too. Friends, we don't count years, bad times or tears. We're here through it all. And when you're sad, you know I'll stay. I'd even carry you until you feel okay. I'm here when you need me. And when I need you, because that's what friends do. Lovely.
But a lump in the throat there now. That is yeah. Incredible. And I can see what you mean. Yeah, but the laughing and crying.
When we recorded emotion. This.
Well, we had to keep going back and doing it again because I was playing my bit and singing it, and he'd do his bit. He'd get upset. The guy filming it was getting upset. His wife, who was in the background, was getting upset. And it was like, we had to do it about 7 or 8 times before we got the final.
Volumes, doesn't it, when it's like that? You know, it was tremendous, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was lovely, you know?
Yeah, but that's beautiful. And you were saying, like, Dimple, they're on YouTube as well.
Dimple and Chin, and we had such a laugh doing that, because that story is all about when I was born in Liverpool, the nurse who delivered me was from Killarney, and she said to me, Mother, oh, look, Dimple and Chin, Devil Within. And it became sort of a family saying then. So what we did was we recreated all these parts throughout my life where this had been said to me. Ones when I was in school. And this is a true story. On the first day of school, I got into a fight and I was taken to the headmaster's office, and he said to me, it's not a good start, Murphy, is it? And I said, no. And he said, look at the dimple in your chin. So in the video, Ricky plays the headmaster and my mate are dressed up as school kids. And then we have one in work, don't we, as well? So Ricky is playing all these different parts right throughout it. And then we ended up in the lounge of an old folks home with all the people in there as extras, didn't he? And we gave them all musical instruments. They had spatulas. They had signs saying, I love Dimple.
They love spatulas in old folks' homes, so they're mad about them.
Yeah. Oh, it was great fun. But they had signs as well, didn't they? We made them signs saying, I love Dimples.
But you know, I love laughing, and I can't help. Sometimes I get in trouble for putting a gag in where I shouldn't, you know.
Yeah, but that's
but we were in
genius.
I was doing a documentary with Sue Johnson recently, and she was in Coventry, and it was like one of the first theatres that Sue done as a professional actress, and she's taught it. And the fella who was doing the show said to me, have you ever worked down here on Coventry? I said, yeah. I said, to be honest with you, I said, this is where I had my greatest ever role. He said, oh, what was that? I said, it was a sausage roll from that. I said, it was a sausage roll from that little shop.
From the mouth of Jim Royle, the Royle family. Do you get it now? But the Cork thing is fabulous as well, because, I mean, there's the Killarney, it's lovely that you're proud of that, the heritage. I mean, I was saying before we went on air that I was in Liverpool, recently, Asa, and I couldn't believe the welcome. It's an amazing tourist destination now.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
And so much to offer, and the food. And I would have loved to have been in the, is it the green room?
Yeah,
I missed that.
And it's like you say, we're all proud of our Irish heritage. I was very honoured recently I was invited down to the Irish Embassy to recognise the work I've done personally to promote the Liverpool Irish Festival in Liverpool, because I'd written Irish Annies, but I'd also written another play, which is called New Generations, which is about a family called the O'Brien family who were in Liverpool. Liverpool, and it's all about their journey, etc. So I was over the moon as a scouser and with Liverpool Heritage to go down to the Irish embassy and sort of meet the ambassador, and we had this lunch and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm extremely proud of, and it's funny, every time I come here I feel like I'm home, because I'm back home.
But it is lovely, isn't it? I felt the same when I was in Liverpool.
Yeah, you would feel the same then. Well, you're like, you're well, second you walk into Liverpool and you open your mouth with the Irish accent, you'll see heads turn and they'll say, oh, where are you from? They just love it because it's home from home.
Yeah, last time I was here, I stayed at the Hampton, the hotel.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. The manager couldn't do enough. He was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But we've got a mate of ours who lived in Liverpool big time on the clubs, and he left, and he's based in Dublin now, a lad called Danny Roman.
Great,
I don't know if you've heard him or had him in. What? He's Tom Jones. He is Tom Jones. And so, Danny, if you're listening, come and see us. Even if you can't stay, come and have a cup of tea in the dressing room before you go off to your gig. He's brilliant.
Brilliant. That sounds good. Okay, guys, it's such a pleasure to talk to you this evening.
Yeah. Lovely to be here.
I feel like we're coming from Liverpool tonight. It's wonderful. We'll have to go over. We'll have to go over and do a show from Liverpool. I think it'll be fabulous.
That'd be brilliant.
But you know, one of the best afternoons, well, evenings it was here. I came over to see Nathan Carter because I knew Nathan.
I go to his concerts all the time. I love him.
Not only did we go to his concerts, Charlie Lanford was playing over there, and Charlie, I introduced Charlie on stage, and so afterwards they all met in this pub by the theatre, and there was a gang of them. There was like Nathan and his band and Charlie and his band and me and a couple of others, and there was a couple of older fellas there, you know, and they were talking country music. Well, I love country music.
Me too.
But I'm not an aficionado, but these fellas, these two old fellas, knew everything. They'd say, oh, that was in 1983. No, he played guitar in that. He knew everything. Mm-hmm. And anyway, we had a great afternoon, and in the end these two fellas said, we've got to get off now. So they said, so they got up and they walked out. I said to Charlie Lansbury, them two knew everything. I said, who are they? He said, that's Foster and Alan.
Ah! Oh my God, a bunch of time. Oh my God. There you go. That explained that anyway. Yeah.
Wow. Wonderful.
One thing about Nathan, I mean, I saw recently his concerts down in Spain or Tenerife or somewhere. I just saw it, and meeting everybody. It must be a Liverpool thing, is
He's
it?
Great.
That wonderful.
Yeah, nice, very nice.
Common touch and genuine interest in people.
Yeah.
But you know how I met him? I was going to Spain, I think. And as we were getting on the plane, this young lad came up and said, excuse me, can I have your autograph, please? I said, I'm getting on the plane. I said, but look, I won't let you down. I promise you. I'll give you. Anyway, when we get off, we go to the carousel to get the cases. And this kid with his family, he's up going up the. So I shouted, hey son, come on, come back, we'll have that photograph and that taken now. It was Jake Carter, Nathan's brother.
Yeah.
That was the first time.
Another TV star.
And then I run my own R&A club in Liverpool, where we had a country Sunday, and we've had him on a few times since. But he was only a bit of a lad.
Brilliant.
That's a must stop if you're on the, if you go to Liverpool, a must stop.
Definitely, yeah.
Brilliant.
And the lads are going to make an appearance in Irish Annie's as well.
Wow.
So that's the, because I don't know if you remember the programme Cheers.
Oh my God.
So that's what Irish
Everyone knows
is
your
like.
Name.
Yeah. So yeah, Irish Annie's is like open to you. You do not know who's going to walk in.
No.
So we've got guest stars, some we can't name, they're that big. We've got some huge stars.
Well, we've had some good ones, haven't we?
Yeah, we've had some.
Jason Manford, Mick Miller, Johnny Vegas, and people
just
like that.
Just come in for
a
pint.
They come in for 5 minutes and just do a little bit and then get off, and it's great.
Well, let me tell you a quick story about it. This is how relaxed Irish Annie's is. We share a dressing room together, don't we, Rick? Yeah. And we were backstage and I'd bought myself a packet of crisps. And you can't leave anything around with him, right? So
light fingers.
Yeah. So I go on stage
first. Spatula in the ball.
Exactly. So I go on stage first for the second half of the show because I'm playing in the band. And next minute, they all come in the pub and he says, oh, look, they're banging the door. I better let them all in. And he walks on eating the bag of crisps, my crisps, crinkle cut crisps, not remembering. Not remembering that his head microphone's still on.
Lovely.
So I'm talking my face line. All he could
hear. Sound engineer going mental.
All he could hear is. He's sitting there.
Another legend, Irish crisps. I'm telling you.
Do any even Tato?
Oh, wow. But that's another prop. Yeah, fantastic.
We have a great time, though, don't we, lad? There's not, no one takes it serious. Yeah. And the lead girl is amazing.
Catherine Rice, who plays amazing. Annie, is outstanding.
Now, let's tell people, by the way, because people are probably dying to know, it's the Intala in the Civic Theatre,
Tuesday
the 2nd to Wednesday the 3rd of April at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
And then you're in Liberty Hall, another very good trade union place.
Yeah.
Dublin, Thursday the 4th to Friday the 5th of April as well at 8 p.m. Liberty Hall. And then you're in Drogheda on the 6th and you're in Galway on the 7th and you're in Cork on the 8th to the 9th. So I'll have to go to that as well.
Yeah.
Amazing. You're getting all over the place. That's going to be brilliant.
It's lovely.
So, I mean, in terms of, I suppose, Catherine Rice there. You were talking about Catherine.
Yeah, Catherine is who plays Annie, is a Liverpool actress, and she's incredibly talented. She's a singer, she's a stand-up comedian, and she plays Annie, and she holds the whole thing together. And she's just amazing, isn't she?
Great.
Because she says when everyone gets into the theatre, now, look, this is my pub, and the most important thing is when you come into Irish Annie is that you sing, you dance, you join. In fact, if you don't, you can get out now.
Right.
That's what she says to them. So you're going to hear the stories of my regulars, and you're going to. We want you to be a part of this. You've got your song sheets. So everyone gets a song sheet when they come into the theatre.
Brilliant.
So they're all sitting there. And she says, right, okay, let's see how we do. And the first song we do in the show, I think, just to get everyone going, is the Black Velvet Band.
Ah, lovely.
So everybody, the noise in the theatres was just incredible. So Kath holds the whole show together, really. She links all the characters, sings herself, dances like a lunatic, doesn't she? And she's really good.
I go to shows sometimes and I hope they'll never be over. I said, with this, I think I want to be there for the whole, like, for about 6 hours.
That's what it's like.
How long is the show,
well,
Asa?
The show, the first half is 50 minutes and the second half's an hour. But to be honest with you, it goes that quickly that when we come to the last song, which is a song I've written called The Irish in the Green, and what I did was I linked all the great Irish sayings together to sum up what makes Ireland and the Irish people so special. So we sing that as the last song of the show, and it's over, and we're all looking at each other and say, oh, we could have done that all over again.
Listen to you now, it's so interesting, because as a little country, I suppose, when you look at St. Patrick's Day, for example, we seem to punch above our weight, and the thing that comes across all the time, I suppose, is, and we can pat ourselves on the back, friendliness and genuine interest in people, and like writers, you know, musicians, it just seems to be in the water, doesn't it?
A plethora of talent.
Amazing.
And we've said the future of Irish Annie is so bright, because there are plans to go to America next year, and we're looking at doing Boston and New York because of the huge.
I think there's also the TV thing that we've been.
It looks like it may be a TV show as well, which will be similar to the Irish. It'll be like an Irish version of Cheers, basically.
Oh my God, that would be brilliant!
But that'd be nice to get local talent on, wouldn't it? If it become a weekly thing.
Well, we could do with some good television. It's such an amazing concept.
It's Irish Annie's, and you are basically invited into Irish Annie. So when you come into that theatre, you're part of that whole experience.
Well, I treat the audience as the parlour. When I come in, I talk to the audience, don't I? They're the parlour, and it's great.
Yeah, that's what he says, yeah. There's a lot of... Like, your first line is there's an awful lot of people in the parlour tonight.
We've got a lot in tonight, Annie.
Listen, Ricky, I'd love, before we let you go, right, I just... You're amazing, the talent from music to acting to everything, and I love the fact that what you guys have done with giving back, right? I think
you've got to give it
mental
back.
Health. I just, not getting too heavy, but what, in terms of the changes you've noticed, Ricky, in your country, I suppose, Brit, over the years, and how do you feel about things at the moment?
I'm quite angry with what's going on. I'm quite angry with what's going on. I mean, as I say, I come from a two up, two down terraced house with a cold water tap. That was it. My three brothers and myself, my mum and dad, and the toilet down the yard. But we've done okay. So I've done okay, you know, I've got a detached house and my grandkids have all got houses. I've been lucky in being able to provide it. But what about pensioners who have to choose between putting an electric fire on or eating an evening meal? That's outrageous. That is outrageous. And I go bonkers about it. I'm quite vocal about it as well. You know, it shouldn't happen.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people that would never have really been entering the political scene, I think now with the way things are here as well, you know, generations being skipped in terms of buying, you were always able to buy a house years ago. It's so bizarre, isn't it? You'd imagine you'll get better as we get older. And people are just getting involved now, like yourself, and you know, who are just frustrated beyond belief.
I am. But recently, we were able to provide a little holiday home for kids, give it them like, for kids who've never had a holiday in Liverpool. And they go away now and they've run through the grass. They've never done that before. They see sheep, they see lambs, they see horses. And they do it through a building, like it was just a charity. And they write letters into the woman, to Annie who runs it. She said, the letters make her cry. She said, the kids have never had such a wonderful time.
Yes.
They've seen horses, they've seen goats and all like that. Because we've given them this little holiday home. It's nothing fancy, it's just theirs. And that's not the first time I went on holiday. I was about 12 and I went with the local youth club, you know. That's how we could afford it. My mum and dad couldn't afford it with four lads. So we went with the church, the youth club from the church.
Yeah.
And it was great.
It seemed much, much happier world. I mean, like you talk about mental health, but that never seemed to be a huge problem back in those days.
Yeah.
I mean, like the spin-offs of all this, the stress, you know, people worried about roofs over their head.
This sounds as though I'm blowing my own trumpet and I'm not. The first thing
you probably played the trumpet as well.
I know, very badly. The first thing I've done, I've got got a couple of granddaughters, and I bought them a little house each. Then they done them up and sort of, and all the kids sorted them all out. But when I watch the television now, and the hike, the interest rate, and people are paying £300 a month more for something they bought, that's outrageous.
Yeah.
Where you can't just conjure money up out of fresh air. That's wrong. It's terrible. If you bought a house and you'd done a deal, that should be the deal.
Yeah.
You know, not depending on some...
And that's why people are suffering with mental health issues, because, you know, if you're being crushed under the pressure of trying to financially provide for your family and making a choice between dressing your kids, feeding your kids, putting the heating on, well, of course...
Never, like 10 years ago, would you ever have thought that this would be an actual thing?
Let's hope that there is, like I say, with the polls, let's hope there is a change so that the country can start, people can start, that those stress levels can drop and people can start just putting food on the table.
Yeah.
And people who've got more money than they know what to do with.
I know, right? I know. Well, listen, I know you're very passionate about things, Ricky. And as I said, it's great to get your take on it. In terms of your philosophy on life, just for people that would be getting into the business now, or what would you like to have known when you were starting off? As I ask this question, I know it's probably, you know, not a good idea, but...
I don't know. I think if you want something badly enough, you'll go for it and you'll keep at it. You know, as I say, I was like 45 or 46 when I got my first little break. But I'd played the pubs and I'd played the clubs, you know, and I'd done...
A late bloomer. And listen, you're flying it.
I think, just to speak for Ricky, the best advice I ever heard you give was at a speech with writers, new writers, and I was privileged to be in the audience. And you said, someone stood up and said, well, I'm from this background, well, I won't have as much chance as that other person. Ricky said, no, if it's good enough and you work hard enough, you will get there.
And you will.
It's about hard
work.
You will.
I've had some great times, you know. I've had some really good times. And as I say, fancy saying to Robert De Niro like I did, are you in the business? Are you in the... I didn't even know who he was.
That's brilliant. And I can imagine his answer.
He was great. He was wonderful.
Yeah. It
was. You see, you bring out the best in people. Doesn't
just say, Robert
you
De Niro.
Couldn't say a bad word to Ricky
Robert
Tomlinson.
Robert De Niro didn't say my arse, did he?
No.
And I worked with Samuel Jackson, and he wasn't in a hotel, he was staying in a golf club, because he loves golf. And he would play 9 holes before he came into work. And everything there on that big movie set with the Yanks, they're all standing there, and the women have got tiaras on at 8 o'clock in the morning, full of bling, and the fellas have got 3-foot cigars and all that. And all their cars are there, the Jaguars, the Mercedes. And I was getting a lift in one day off my mate. And I said to him, don't be late, whatever you do, because they all watch you coming in. And as we come in, I will never forget the expression on their place. As my mate drove me in, they went... Because I was in a milk float. My mate was a milkman and he was getting a day's extra work and he was taking me to work in the milk float. Well, I was early.
You couldn't make it up. Listen, Ricky Tomlinson, Asa Murphy, it's been an absolute pleasure. You've brought a ray of sunshine into the Sunshine Studio this evening. And guys, if anyone wants to get de-stressed Irish Annie's, you know where it is. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much.
Come and bring your phone. Come and have a selfie. Come and have a... Enjoy yourself.
Yeah. Bring your sleeping bag, it sounds like.
Get your woes for half an hour.
Yeah.
Brilliant, guys. Thank you.